From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. The countdown is on. Georgia's new hands-free law goes into effect this Sunday, but drivers still have questions. Everyone agrees that distracted driving is a problem in Georgia. According to the National Safety Council, more than 1,500 people died on Georgia's roads in 2016. Among the top three causes, cell phones. Lawmakers are bent on getting phones out of drivers' hands. So what does that really mean? Greg Bluestein joins us now from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's been reporting on it and is here to talk us through. Hello, Greg.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Greg, the hands-free law, this is House Bill 673, passed by the General Assembly, signed into law by Governor Nathan Deal. Why now? Why is it needed in Georgia at this moment?
Well, this is the most significant change in driving rules in Georgia since lawmakers banned texting while driving in 2010. They came after a huge lobbying effort from lawmakers and from families of victims who were injured or killed in distracted driving cases. And it came despite opposition from critics who called this government overreach and said that police should do a better job of enforcing the existing texting ban. It ended up winning over support from not only Governor Nathan Deal, but also legislative leaders who said the loss of life was just too much. A lot of emotional testimony helped win this bill over.
So texting banned in 2010, do you think that's made a real dent in how people are using their cell phones?
There's a lot of loopholes in that texting driving while driving law, including prohibitions on texting, but not on actually handling cell phones. And this would actually ban handling cell phones. So you can't even hold a cell phone while making a phone call. You can't dial a number. You can't do anything involving actually holding a cell phone, which authorities think will really crack down on distracted driving incidents.
So let's go through some of those do's and don'ts, if you don't mind. You just mentioned people must have a phone mounted. They cannot be handling it in their hands, in their lap, correct?
You got it. And that includes even GPS. Now, to even change your GPS directions, you'll have to park your car under this law. So that means before you start driving, you put your address in. Don't make any changes to the address on your phone while driving. The exceptions are you can use voice-based communication. So you can use earpieces, headphones, smartwatches to make phone calls and even send texts, as long as you're not touching your cell phone.
And you have to be legally parked. That's a biggie.
That's a biggie. That means no using your cell phone while stopped at a stop sign or a red light. And that's a huge huge change for a lot of people who use red lights and stop signs as a pause and a chance to catch up on some of their phone calls.
Or pull right over on the side of the road in the middle of traffic. I've seen it happen. So,
that
all right,
too.
You can text using voice-enabled calls. You're allowed to make phone calls using voice-enabled calls, no punching at all.
You got it. You can make phone calls using earpieces, headphones, smartwatches. And there are a few other exceptions to this legislation, like if there's a reporting a traffic accident, a medical emergency, if you're a first responder during the performance of official duties, and, of course, if you're in a lawfully parked vehicle. So those are the handful of exceptions. But for the most part, all handling of an actual cell phone is going to be prohibited as of Sunday.
Okay, so forgive me for being persnickety, but we've got a lot of listeners who've asked us these questions. How about emails? Can you send an email using voice-enabled devices?
Yeah, voice-based communication automatically converted to written message is allowed under this law. So same, just like a text, if you have a Bluetooth-enabled technology or an earpiece that lets you send emails or text messages through audio commands, you can use that.
Okay, but older model cars are not generally hands-free enabled. So what do they have to do? And is this law in some ways discriminating against those who don't have new model cars?
Yeah, that's why there's something of a rush on buying. My wife just did it herself, buying these sort of Bluetooth earphones that also allow voice-communicated activation. So there is an option for folks, but some of these don't come cheap. Some of these earbuds are as much as $150, $160. You can buy cheaper ones for $20, but they're not as good quality.
Okay, here's some comments from listeners. Greg Flux said, hopefully it will make safer to both drive and ride my bike on the road. It would also seem to be wise to provide driver education again and enforce things like the speed limits. We're going to be speaking with somebody who is in driver education in just a minute. And Neil Cassidy said, until Georgia drivers learn to use that little indicator lever on the left of the steering wheel, the phone should be totally off limits. So, of course, this is not going to cure the way people drive. What do lawmakers expect? Any real numbers from other states that have banned handheld devices?
Yeah, in other states with similar legislation, they've seen declines in distracted driving incidences. They've seen declines, especially in rear-end collisions, which are the most sort of likely to happen during these distracted driving events. But also they know this is going to be a real learning process for Georgia drivers. It's going to take a long time. Some police departments even have something of a grace period where they're just going to issue warnings before they issue any tickets. And even when people have a first ticket, it's not as expensive as a speeding violation. The first conviction is $50 and 1 point on a license. The second conviction is $100. It's not until the third conviction where it really gets really expensive. It's $150 and 3 points on a license.
Well, let's hear from how police departments are preparing. This is Major Elder Dancy from the Atlanta Police Department.
Our main thing is we want to make sure the public is educated. Everybody is not going to be familiar with this new law July 1st. I know there are a lot of public campaigns to push this message out as well as with our public affairs unit. But we want to make sure we give everyone the benefit of the doubt. But at the same time, we want them to understand that this is a new law, and we are serious about enforcing it.
Serious about enforcing it. So what happens if one is pulled over? You get a warning, you get a citation, what?
Yeah, it just depends on the department. I mean, some departments will give a little leeway and will just offer a warning at first. Others are just going to start immediately cracking down. And again, that first conviction is $50. Second one is $100. Third is $150. So it escalates as you keep on violating.
I'm speaking with Greg Bluestein. He's political reporter from the AJC, and because he's a busy reporter, couldn't be in the studio, but we're talking about the upcoming hands-free law, which takes place on July 1st. That is Sunday, everybody, in case you don't know. But, you know, you talked about changes in behavior for drivers, but how about for police? I mean, this leaves a lot of discretion to issue citations in their cases.
It does, and lawmakers hope it also gives them more clarity about it. Because again, before the law that banned texting while driving, well, there were some loopholes. If you were if you told an officer that you weren't texting, you were actually on your GPS device, there was a way around it. Now, if an officer sees you handling a cell phone, he or she could pull you over and cite you with this violation. And so in some ways, it gives them a little bit more clarity. And one of my colleagues rode around with a Georgia State Patrol officer not too long ago, and within an hour, he found, you know, dozens of instances of people doing this, just like we all see in the highways when we're driving as well. I mean, officers are seeing the same things we are. So now it's a little more clear-cut about what they can do.
You know, I've been noticing something anecdotally, and actually somebody posted about this, noticing that it seems like people are trying to get used to this law, that they are not using their cell phones, or you don't see many people fumbling with their phones as much as you did even a month ago. Do you think that's true?
It certainly is for me. I mean, I'm one of those stop sign / red light violators that you know catch up on my phone calls or text on red lights, for better or for worse. And it's been a real hard process for me. But you know, I'm trying to make sure that I abide by the law come Sunday. So I think a lot of other people are too.
Well, Greg, one of the big questions here also that we've been getting is about music streaming apps. Now, there's a myth going around about not being able to use Spotify, but being able to use iTunes Music. Could you clarify that for us, if you would?
Yeah, as far as we understand, that streaming apps are allowed. As long as they're through your phone, Bluetooth devices that connect with your cars. There is some question about whether or not you can use your earbuds, your wireless earphones, to listen to music rather than phone calls. Apparently, you cannot. But I think that's a little bit more of the clarity. This is one of those laws that's gonna take one or two revisits, I bet. I think lawmakers are going to have to go back next year or the year after that and clarify some of the questions that remain, because there are some some loopholes still in this legislation that, that drivers and officers won't really realize until it really goes into effect.
Well, we have an attorney here that we're going to be speaking to in our next segment about some of those loopholes, because that is his business. So this is a huge behavioral change. We also spoke with Robert Heidrich. He's communications manager at Georgia's Governor's Office of Highway Safety. Here's his take.
This law is going to result in behavior change for people. People have been talking on their phones and driving for 30 years, and on July 1, they're not going to be able to have a phone in their hand or support it on their body to talk on their phone while driving.
Well, behavioral changes are tough, as you said. It's going to take some time, some probably revisiting of this. I do have a question here from Nuri Castillo Crawford, who asks, will there be a grace period?
Yeah, the grace period question really depends on the local authorities. Some police departments have said they're going to give a month of grace period. Some have said 90 days. And others have said they're going to start enforcing this legislation immediately. And really, those departments point to the dramatic increase in traffic fatalities that occurred. Last year, there was about 1,549 people who died on Georgia highways. That's one-third more than in 2014. So those departments say we can't wait any longer to enforce this law.
So you do get pulled over. Will the police be able to ask for your phone to see if you've been violating the ban, sending emails or listening to streaming apps or posting on social media?
Yeah, I asked a lawmaker about that. From what I understand, the police will still be able to ask for it, but you do not have to hand it over. Just like they can ask to search your car, you don't have to let them do so. Now, that again might be something that lawmakers can clarify more next year. But from what I understand, they have no right to access your phone.
What is the biggest misconception you think, Greg, about this law?
That's a good one. I think again, the biggest part is, can I use my cell phone while stop at a stop sign or red light? And the clear answer is no. You have to park your car, legally park your car. That means at a parking spot. That means, not necessarily just idling your car in traffic. That means park your car, not only to text or personally handle your phone, but that also means to access GPS or anything else you'd access on your phone, which, again, is a big change because I'm used to, getting a call from my wife in the middle of traffic saying, hey, we're meeting at XYZ restaurant, and then plugging it into my GPS while I'm driving. No longer.
So I've been looking at countdown clocks around town. People are talking about this. What is your feeling about the vibe, I guess, of this impending law on Sunday?
Well, as Robert Heidrich said, this is a giant cultural change for us Georgia motorists who have been talking on cell phones for almost with their hands as long as they have existed. And for those of us who have driven in other states that have these laws, it is a really big shock, to go into a state, especially in New England area, that have a lot of these laws, not being able to do this. So we're about to get that shock here in Georgia.
Greg Bluestein, political reporter from the AJC. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
The hands-free law does go into effect this Sunday. That is July 1st. And ask your questions about the do's and don'ts of the law. We're on Facebook or Twitter at OST Talk. In just a minute, we're going to be hearing from some of the people who will be on the front lines, the driving school instructors, and also a personal injury lawyer who is going to be talking about this law and how it's going to affect changes, suits, and claims. Stay with us. This is On Second Thought from GPB News.
There's always someone swerving in the lane. You keep swerving in the lane, and it's causing lots of danger. I'm a honking on my horn, I'm a shooting you the finger. I keep a switching on my...
From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. You heard it. Beginning this Sunday, Georgia drivers will no longer be able to hold phones while driving. We were curious about which other activities had been considered unsafe while driving. A little digging revealed that, one, ever since humans sat behind the wheel, they have found reasons to take their eyes off the road. And two, at some time and place in American history, laws have been proposed to ban just about all of them. With that, here is...
New cars in 20 years from Chrysler Corporation. brief history of driving distraction. The radio.
So let me break that down for you. When the first car radio appeared in 1922, a decade later, two states argued that radios distracted drivers and that tuning them took a driver's attention away from the road or could lull them to sleep. The Radio Manufacturers Association fired back, advocating for car radios to be used to warn drivers of bad weather or road conditions. Plus, it could keep them awake.
Cigarettes.
Start with the top tobacco, grade A1.
As the post-war automotive age ramped up, so did the number of smokers. Advertisers played up the healthful benefits of smoking. Long before the public knew of damage to health, smoking was considered a danger on the road, what with the lighting and the ashes and occasionally dropped embers. Still, determined smokers pressed on.
The Highway Hi-Fi.
In 1956, Chrysler introduced the Highway Hi-Fi, a vinyl record player that for the first time allowed drivers to choose what they wanted to hear. As long as you chose one of the 16.66 RPM format albums manufactured by Columbia Records. And then there was the needle jumping around and scratching. Chrysler stopped making them 3 years later, but the die was cast. Music lovers would not be at the mercy of radio DJs for long.
The 8-track.
Then came a music player made just for cars. No fiddling with buttons, no fast forward or rewind, just a satisfying clunk when changing tracks. Ford installed stereo 8-track players in its sporty Mustang and Thunderbird models beginning in 1965. 2 years later, it was an option in every car Ford made. Dashboard-mounted 8-track players and hip huggers weren't far behind.
Eating.
1950s drive-in culture morphed into eat-and-drive culture. Researchers and insurance companies have plenty of data on the dangers of eating while driving. Response times can slip up to 44%. Some states have laws against eating while driving, though there is some latitude in giving citations, as in the case of one Madison Turner back in 2015. Turner was pulled over in Cobb County shortly after tucking into a quarter pounder with cheese and cited. When asked about the charge by WSB-TV, Mr. Turner responded in seeming disbelief that the officer told him, specifically, three times, "You can't just drive down the road while eating a hamburger."
Movies.
In 1983, Chrysler debuted the minivan, and millions of beleaguered parents bought one. The minivan, also known as the sweatpants of cars, it's a signal to the world you've just given up, was not everything parents had hoped for. Just because there's room for your kids to stretch out and still wear a seatbelt, you won't be spared the annoying, "How much farther and are we there yet?" whines. So in the 1990s, Honda added a video player to keep the kiddies quiet watching Disney princesses and cat and dog buddy movies. But that first model had the screen right above the rearview mirror, making it ridiculously seductive for the already sleep-deprived and easily distracted parent in the driver's seat. Before the law attempted to correct this design flaw, the car makers themselves moved the screen to the center of the car ceiling, so only the back rows could view it. Thus, parents returned to making calls, searching for CDs, and eating fries out of their cup holders.
Makeup!
Mixing the bronzer and the blush together and just making them a family.
It's called farding. F-A-R-D-I-N-G. When someone is too busy steadying their mascara to realize that they're about to rear-end someone. Makeup mirrors have been built into the passenger side sun visor for most cars since the late 70s. Although the gender-conforming car makers initially limited mirrors to the passenger side, you know, where the ladies sit, not anymore. Now there's a makeup mirror for the driver, too. Try this. Are you in your car right now? If so, flip down the sun visor. Is there a mirror? Is there a mirror that lights up? I rest my case.
Making out.
Traditionally, people park to make out. But sometimes lovers young and old get carried away and still try and steal a kiss or something. It works great in the movies, and so far it is still legal.
Texting.
Don't. Just don't.
Shopping!
How much is this, Marie? It's very expensive.
How badly do you need that scented candle? Will it really fix your life, or just fill the hole left in your heart when you bought that minivan and threw away your dreams? Predictions are that the new distractions will be looking for hidden police on the Waze app, so you won't get busted for distracted driving.
Happy trails, and remember to keep your eyes on the road. Batteries not included.
We're grateful to Josh Furlinger and IT World for their research on this. We found more at Ars Technica, WSB-TV, Livewire, and Bon Appetit. Thanks to GPB's Kevin Ward for the voiceover. And now to today. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates that more than 3,000 deaths annually are caused by distraction-induced crashes. The Governor's Office of Highway Safety says the vast majority of these crashes have involved drivers from between 15 and 25 years old. So now to someone who's going to be working on changing behavior for young drivers. Rachel Louette Galati is owner and executive vice president of Nathan's Driving School in Atlanta. Good morning, Rachel.
Good morning.
Also with us, one of the people who is going to be dealing with the effects of the law, Darrell Champion, is managing partner and personal injury lawyer at Champion Firm. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being here. Rachel, I know you have to cut out quickly. So first to you, your dad started the business, right?
He did, yeah. Back in the 80s, so that we've been around for a long time.
So many people,
it's very important to us.
Many people listening or learning how to drive probably have seen the Nathan's Driving School car. So you've been putting new drivers on the phone for on the road for a long time. So have cell phones changed how people drive and how you teach?
Definitely, especially when it comes to the young people, the teenagers, because their whole world is on that little device, and it's hard to get them to put it away. You know, it's such a part of them, and to get them to understand the importance of it and how much, you know, it takes their eyes and their minds away from the road.
Do you also notice that other drivers on the road, of course, you're teaching kids how to drive defensively, are driving more poorly?
Oh, definitely. We actually have our students stand out on the corner near some of our schools, and they write down and record all of the people as they go through lights and as they go through intersections. And it's amazing the different types of distractions we see. And there's all different types, not just cell phones. There's all different things, but definitely cell phones. And the scary part is oftentimes people are looking down. You can tell that they're holding a phone, they're trying to hide it, and they're looking down so they cannot see what's coming.
Here is the Representative John Carson, prime mover of House Bill 673, speaking at the state capitol.
Distracted driving is a major issue in Georgia. The whole goal of this piece of legislation is to get the phone out of the driver's hands. What the bill will allow you to do is to operate your cell phone. You can touch the screen to dial a phone call, to end a phone call, to receive a phone call, and you can still use, obviously, the phone for GPS navigation use.
So, Rachel, what did you think when you heard this law was in effect?
I thought it was wonderful. And even before it was in effect, you know, we were very supportive of it. I had a chance to go down and hear Representative Carson speak and also some of the victims, you know, of, you know, cell phone, you know, accidents. And it was very good to hear that. And I'm very glad it's, you know, happened. We've always, as our best practices said, you know, do not use a cell phone while driving.
Darrell Champion, how about you? What were your initial thoughts when you heard about this law?
Oh, I thought it was great as well. You know, unfortunately, in my practice, I see the effects of distracted driving on a daily basis. And so I think it's a great start, but I think it's going to take a long time to change driver behavior.
Yeah, of course. How many cases do you estimate for your clients involve distracted driving pointing to cell phone use?
That's a great question. And I don't have an exact figure because sometimes it's hard to tell whether somebody is actually on the phone. Sometimes we may know when they're on the phone. Other times they may not be actually on the phone, but could still be distracted by something. For example, they may be watching a video or—
As we heard.
Exactly. Or, you know, they may be about to send a text message. They may be typing it in. Some of that stuff may not necessarily be reflected on cell phone records that we could get in the case. So it's really hard to put a number on it, but there are certainly far too many instances of injuries and deaths from distracted driving.
Well, we have a number of questions from listeners, including one who doesn't want to be identified. How is all of this proven? Are they pulling cell phone records? Seems like another reason to pull people over without probable cause. Now, this is going to be your business. You're going to be defending people who were pulled over for these kind of distracted driving citations.
So there's two components to it. The first is going to be the citation, and I don't handle citation cases. I only represent people who've been injured or killed in distracted driving cases. And in personal injury cases in general. So from my point of view, how do we prove it in a personal injury case? There's a number of ways. One, we can pull the cell phone records after a lawsuit's filed. We can send subpoenas to the cell phone companies. Another way is just by talking to witnesses. Sometimes people see somebody on the phone. My experiences with citations, generally speaking, have been limited to getting them on my own for things like speeding, unfortunately. But I certainly have plenty of friends who do handle traffic citations, and I've talked to them about it. And I think as they read the law and as I read it, there's a lot of open questions. And I think there's going to be some issues that are going to have to be fleshed out.
Yeah. So besides what we spoke about earlier, the idea of seeing somebody using a cell phone, will a police officer, if they pull you over, be able to say, hand me your phone? I want to see if you were texting or posting to social media, for example.
Well, I think Greg was exactly right. They can certainly ask, just like they can ask to search your car. But you don't have to give them permission to do it.
So they need a warrant to look at your phone?
Yes. So I think the bigger issue is going to be, how are police enforcing it? There's a lot of people that, you know, I'm guilty of sitting at the traffic light or the stop sign and trying to scroll through the text messages or maybe return a call or listen to a voicemail message. When police see something like that, are they going to pull people over? Are they going to maybe use that as a pretext to stop somebody over to try to search their vehicle for some other reason? So I think there's going to be a lot of consequences from this law, and we're just going to have to see how it plays out.
And Rachel, you and your family have been dealing with this target population for a long time, the 18 to 25-year-olds who are most accident-prone or most likely to be involved in single car crashes, for example, and rear-enders. So tell me about that. You're also dealing with kids who grew up using GPS. They don't necessarily know their way around town. So how do you work with them to navigate not just the road, but the new law?
Well, even before the new law went into effect, this is something we've always, always practiced, whether it was the law or not, how dangerous distracted driving is. So we've always, you know, told students, you've got to be paying attention. If your eyes are not on the road and your hands are not on the wheel, you can't control what's happening. And we, you know, try to explain that to them, but we also do different activities to demonstrate you can't completely multitask that way. So, you know, we'll have, you know, them try to read something off the board while we have them catch a ball at the same time, coming from the side. You know, it's trying to stimulate the real world out there, but that's the type of thing that happens in traffic. You might be quickly checking your cell phone because you're pulling up to a red light, but somebody else is going to run a light or somebody else is going to turn, and you can't react if you're on your phone. So we try to explain that to them. And then we also try to make it real for them and pull current news stories and have students talk about, because somebody they know in every class, there's going to be somebody who knows somebody who was in an accident because of cell phones.
Yeah, tragically enough. Darrell, if the distracted driver is an underage teenager, in one of your cases, a personal injury or death case, does that make a difference in the claim?
Under this law, there was a prior distinction on whether teenage drivers with certain permits or conditions on their license could use a cell phone at all. Those specific statutes that make the distinction have been repealed with this law. So this law sort of has a blanket approach to all drivers and applies to everyone.
So we heard earlier from Greg that he thinks there's probably going to be some iterations, some reworking of this law. What are you expecting?
I totally agree with that. And I think it's going to take a number of years to see how it plays out. I think the behavioral changes are going to be the big thing. You know, we have laws against speeding. People still speed. I think people are going to have a really hard time putting their phone down when it comes to talking on the phone because they're just so used to it, or even just holding their phone to maybe punch in an address or change their GPS location.
Well, just as Rachel's trying to make it real for kids, maybe we can make it real for other drivers. For those who have been injured in a case, what are they entitled to in a distracted driving accident case?
So anytime somebody has been involved in an accident with a distracted driver, there's a number of issues that get raised. And one of those is the types of damages that you're allowed to claim. In some cases, you can claim something called punitive damages, and that's basically designed to punish really, really bad conduct, recklessness, reckless driving. And so generally in the past, simply holding your phone and talking on it and causing an accident wasn't enough to be allowed to entitle someone to punitive damages. I think that's going to be an open question now. Of course, I think it's always been the standard that if somebody is texting and is just not looking at the road and they injure or kill someone, there's going to be added damages to that case because of that egregious conduct.
Rachel, so is part of your driving course is now going to be teaching kids how to, or students, young people, how to yell at their phones so it hears them properly?
You know, it's the young people, I think, already know how to do that. The challenge is going to be getting, we have, you know, defensive driving courses for people who already have infractions or want to lower their insurance, and it's going to be getting the adults to understand and learn the new technology, how to work Bluetooth, how to, you know, get their GPSs to respond to their voice. I think the teenagers probably already know how to do that. It's getting them to have the desire to do it and the care. It's going to be getting the adults the learning curve of this.
It's a steep uphill climb. Rachel Levette Galati, thank you so much for sticking around. I know you have
someplace
to be.
Thank you so much for having us. I hope this all goes well. Thank you.
She's owner and EVP of Nathan's Driving School in Atlanta. And Darl Champion, personal injury lawyer and managing partner of the Champion Firm. Thank you so much for explaining that for us.
Thank you.
So next up, we're going to hear from the new head coach of the Atlanta Dream, the WNBA basketball team. This is On Second Thought. Please stay with us. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Have you got a favorite book? A Great American Read from PBS has a list of more than 100 to choose from. We're going to consider the canon, some of the guilty pleasures, the cocktail party conversation starters on tomorrow's program. You can go to gpb.org and check out the list and take a quiz to find out which character you are from literature and then let us know the name of your favorite book. Leave us a voicemail. We're at 404-500-9457, or you can find us on Twitter or on Facebook. And then be sure to join us tomorrow at 9 o'clock for more. Atlanta sports fans, rejoice. The Braves are leading the National League East by 4 games. And in Major League Soccer, Atlanta United is dominating the Eastern Conference. The team landed 6 of its players on the All-Star Game roster, and the Atlanta Dream is now ranked 3rd in the Eastern Conference of the WNBA. They're going to meet the Chicago Sky later today. So we're kicking it. Here to give us a preview of that game and some updates on all the latest in the world of sports is GPB's Taylor Gant, producer for Morning Edition and our resident super sporty guy. Good morning, Taylor.
Glad to be here.
You're so typecast now. All right, let's start with the Braves. After last year, the Braves came into the season with pretty low expectations. So what has happened to turn it around?
So really, it's been a groundswell of really exciting young talent mixed with some older players who've been around for a while. There's 2 players right now who are entering their 20s, who have really been lighting it up. Ozzie Albies, who's 21 now, has been a hitting machine for the Braves. And for Ronald Acuna Jr., he's 19 years old, or he just turned 20. And although he's hurt, he's had a fantastic season so far. And so you have this mix of older players as well. Nick Markakis, who's leading the team in hitting, and Freddie Freeman, who's been the cornerstone for the Braves for quite some time. So, you know, having this influx of young and old has been fantastic for the Braves so far.
Good mix. So I know things can change very quickly, but I think we're going to get to the playoffs in October or too soon.
Well, you nailed it. The drudgery of the baseball season is that we still have many more months until we actually see some postseason baseball. Until October, you know, we have several more months of very hot weather, and a lot can change. You know, injuries and the ability for a team to really be consistent, especially when you have a couple younger players who haven't done this before. So I'd say we have a great chance at this point, but let's not count any chickens before there's hatching to be done. We still have a lot of months to go.
All right, let's move on to Atlanta United. Bennett, number one for a while now, and they're sending 6 players to the All-Star game. One of those players, Darlington Nagbe, was just injured. So what's next for the team?
Well, thankfully, the first place Atlanta United, they have a solid depth to rely on. The Nagbe injury, he'll be out for about 3 months. But thankfully, a star from last year who's got a lot less time because of the Nagbe acquisition, Hector Tito Villalba, will likely get a lot more playing time. And he's been a stud. He was an all-star last year. So I don't expect much of a drop-off there. I will say Atlanta United, once again, crushing it in attendance. Over 48,000 people people a game. If you look at the second place team, which is Seattle, that's more than 9,000 per game than they're getting, which is insane. And then Joseph Martinez, once again, leading the MLS in goals with 14. So plus having a majority Atlanta United team represent in the All-Star game in Atlanta, which is coming up in August 1st. They play the Italian team Juventus. It's going to be an all-Atlanta MLS for the next couple months.
So people are still watching the Atlanta team, but maybe not the World Cup, or are they?
Well, I'd say transitioning into the World Cup, it's been fantastic. You know, I might have come on and gave the impression I was a little bummed out that the U.S. men's team wasn't involved, but the action has really surpassed my expectations. And if you haven't gotten a chance to watch them...
You mean if you don't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning?
Well, thankfully, you don't have to. The round of 16 starts on Saturday, which means it's the 16 final teams in the tournament, and you'll get a chance to see the two best players in the world playing in different games, but you'll still get to see them. Argentina versus France is at 10 a.m. on Saturday, so set your alarms. It's not too early. Argentina's had a tough go of it. Their star, Lionel Messi, has received a lot of negative backlash for kind of a middling performance in the Cup so far. But his team did beat Nigeria yesterday to advance, and so a lot of that pressure might have been lifted. And then after that, you can see Uruguay and Portugal. You see Cristiano Ronaldo, who's been on fire this World Cup. 4 goals so far, and that's at 2. So not as early as maybe some of those games in the group stage, so you'll still get a chance to enjoy some World Cup soccer while it lasts. I mean, it's ending July 15th, so watch it while you can.
Any major upsets in the World Cup so far?
The biggest one, and this happened in group play, so that doesn't mean that they're eliminated, but Mexico, our friendly rivals to the south, beat Germany, the defending champions, 1-0 in the early stages of the tournament, and that was a huge upset. You could just see the emotion on the Mexican players' face, how much that meant to them to finally, you know, beat one of those great European superpowers. But both of those teams will most likely advance to the tournament, and so who knows, they might meet again for another meaningful showdown.
Okay, so we're landing back at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, the Atlanta Falcons wide receiver Julio Jones putting pressure on the Falcons for a new contract. Now, Forbes contributor called the situation officially concerning. What's going on there?
It's a bit of a strange situation. So Julio Jones is by no means underpaid. He earns $14 million a year for the Falcons, which is only $3 million less than the highest paid wide receiver. But he's getting up a little bit in age. He'll turn 30 next year. So if you look at the bell curve of athletes, once you hit the big 3-0, especially for skill positions like wide receivers and running backs, that's when you start seeing the decline. So it appears that this is kind of a negotiation ploy to make sure he gets one last big contract. I mean, he's still got 3 years on this one. So, you know, players and fans can be kind of split on this. A lot of times you want to see your players get paid, but then again, you want to also let your team spend money on other people who might be deserving of contracts. So it's a little tricky right now, but I mean, we got just over a month before we actually start playing games. So the clock's ticking on whether this will work or not.
All right, quickly on the Atlanta Dream, the WNBA team has a game today against the Chicago Sky. And we're going to hear an interview that our colleague Leah Fleming did with the Atlanta Dream coach, Nikki Collin, just a couple of minutes. But while we have you here, how is the Dream doing this season?
Well, as you mentioned in the intro, they're third place in the Eastern Conference, which means if the season ended today, they'd be in the playoffs. They missed last year mainly because their star, Angel McCautry, took a season off. She was doing split duty for the WNBA, and she was also playing overseas, which is something, because the WNBA doesn't pay a lot, that a lot of female players have to do. And that's a whole other conversation in itself. But right now, with her back, averaging just about 20 points a game, they're looking very competitive, and there's still a good chunk of the season left. So hopefully there's still some chances to go out and see him.
All right. We have a long, hot summer ahead of us. Atlanta sports are just kicking it. And GPB's Taylor Gant is here with me. We're talking about the latest developments in Atlanta sports. Atlanta's professional women's basketball team, as we said, the Atlanta Dream, has its eye on the playoffs this year with new head coach Nikki Collin at the helm. She recently sat down with my colleague, Morning Edition host Leah Fleming.
So I read somewhere that you grew up playing basketball and other sports, and then you went on to play overseas, and that you actually tried out to play in the WNBA, but you didn't make the cut.
Oh, yeah. I can admit that now, right? Yeah, I tried out for the Detroit Shock. At the time, Nancy Lieberman was the coach and had actually called some broadcasts of mine my senior year at Marquette. And so felt like a good place to get off the ground. I was, you know, there till the last cuts, and felt like I was good enough to play in the WNBA. And when I didn't make it, I wanted to go overseas and give it another shot. But ultimately, the year I was overseas in Greece was also the year the other professional women's league, the ABL, folded. And with that, all the players from the ABL moved to the WNBA. You know, there just wasn't a lot of room for a 5'6 point guard when the Dawn Staleys of the world were still playing. So moved into coaching, and here I am.
So what's it like to finally make it to the WNBA as a coach?
You know, I never thought when I got into coaching that this is where I would end up. I think, you know, we grow up with a very college-centered spectrum. You know, I grew up in Big Ten country, played in the Big Ten, then transferred and played at Marquette. But, you know, you think of that in some ways as the epitome, and got involved in college and bounced around in college and was married to a college head coach. And so it really wasn't until Kurt Miller took the job in Connecticut, and with our pre-existing relationship and the situation, you know, professionally I was in at the time, you know, to have a chance to coach the best players in the world was just a unique opportunity that I couldn't pass up. And 2 years later, to get the opportunity to be a head coach in this league, you know, still some days I pinch myself, as tough a grind as the season is and how fast and furious the games come. You know, I think we all, even the players, have to remind ourselves that we coach or play a game for a living, and really how cool that is.
Yeah. So the WNBA has been around for about 22 years. And I was recently looking at this online community for women's basketball fans, and there was this post that was done about the myths that continue to surround the WNBA. And I wanted to see if you could dispel some of those myths. Like, number one, WNBA games are not competitive.
Oh, my. I mean, it's really the best athletes in the world play in our league. And so it's physical, it's competitive. It's the best of the best, and if you don't compete, you don't keep a job. You know, the best team can get beat by the 12th place team on any given night because our league is so deep because of not having, you know, more teams than 12. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, let's dispel that myth. It's incredibly competitive, or my job would be a lot easier.
Yeah. All right, myth number two, women can't do what men do because of biology, like dunk.
Well, I think we have players that can dunk. I just think the women's game is different than the men's game. There are genetic differences. I mean, that's a reality. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that the game isn't as beautiful. It's just a little bit different. And if you're looking to watch a game that's filled with dunks, then our game isn't that, you know. But if you're looking for great athletes who can shoot the ball, pass the ball, move the ball, screen, cut, be explosive, it has all of those things, you know, and occasionally you're going to get a Brittany Griner dunk, and there are a handful of players who can dunk, but it's not obvious. You're not going to see a lot of lob dunks and things like that, but you are going to see great, great athleticism.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Myth number three, women ball players do not look like models. And I want to point out that Nick Young, who has played for and plays for the Golden State Warriors, and he was on this tour celebrating their NBA championship recently, and he decided to just randomly tweet that WNBA viewership would increase if the players look like Instagram models.
Okay. Well, I mean, we're not models, and neither are the NBA players. I think we have some very feminine, very beautiful, traditionally beautiful athletes in Skylar Diggins and Elena Deladon and Candace Parker. And I mean, you can go down the list, but is that why you want to watch a good basketball game? I mean, that would be my question. If I wanted to see models, I'd go watch a runway show or I'd watch a pageant. I think that our players carry themselves in a way that's comfortable to each of them. And, you know, I'm really proud of what our league stands for, whether it's, you know, what it means in the LGBT community or what it means around the world and the social issues that our players have headed up and been right in the forefront of.
Mm-hmm. So the WNBA All-Star Game is taking place July 28th, and that's happening in Minneapolis. And just like the NBA, the WNBA has some changes to choosing players for some added drama to the game. For example, the captains of the two teams, those will be the two highest vote getters and the All-Star voting, and then there will be a draft of the 20 other players. So I'm wondering, how do you think this is all going to work out?
Well, I think the NBA players were really excited about the new format. I think the WNBA Players Association kind of had fun with this. Certainly it was headed up by the league office. I mean, if it adds excitement, if the players are excited about it, if it's a way to continue to engage the fans and really get back to the fans, I think, you know, as much as anything, you ask me that question, it's like, all right, Atlanta, get out and vote. You know, get out for your dream players. You can vote once a day on the WNBA.com. You can also retweet. You know, there's lots of great promotions going on that our PR department is putting out there in terms of videos and things to promote some of our players. But let's face it, it's a popularity contest right now. And so, you know, we've got a lot of people in greater Atlanta that can start voting for the Angel McCautrys, the Tiffany Hayes, the Jessica Brelands, the Renee Montgomerys, you know, that are having great seasons for us so far here.
So when the first national women's basketball tournament took place, it took place in 1926. It was sponsored by the AAU, which is the Amateur Athletic Union. It played under men's rules. College educators during that time really opposed that for women, saying that they believed women were not adequately prepared for such a rough game and that the game of basketball was not appropriate for women. So have we come a long way since 1926?
Oh, I'd say we've come a long way. But, you know, even when I was growing up, you know, I was born in 75 and certainly was a Title IX baby in that I was never told I couldn't do something because I was a girl. You know, I grew up in Wisconsin, and in Iowa, they were still playing 3-on-3 or 6-on-6. And that was predicated on, you know, women not being able to go up and down a full court. You know, like you can just have half the court and you three are offense and you three are defense. And, you know, you had to pass it at half court. And so, I mean, it's amazing how far we've come even in the last 30 years and what our sport looks like. And, you know, we talked about the competitiveness before, but I don't think there's any doubt, as I raise two daughters and a son, that, you know, that they don't understand a world where, you know, they couldn't do anything that they wanted to do.
Yeah. So you have to allow me this moment of corniness. Is coaching the dream a dream come true for you? Not that you've ever heard this before.
Yeah, I know. It's very cliche-ish, right? But it's kind of a cool thing when I've talked about this before, like my path to this point wasn't a straight line. You know, it wasn't a set of stairs that I climbed one stair at a time. There were lots of landings and turns and twists. And, you know, so to end up here and really have it happen so organically, where it wasn't this is the job I have to have and this is when I have to have it. It truly was a situation where I was really happy in Connecticut. Had a really good role, a really good team, was excited about going back to Connecticut. And then this process with Atlanta started and it unfolded so organically that it really did in some ways feel like a dream because, you know, I wasn't running from something or running to something. Mm-hmm. It just felt like the right move and it felt like the right move for me professionally. It felt like the right move for me personally and in terms of moving my family and three kids, you know, and so it's been a really, really cool experience. I think I won't process it all until, you know, we get through the season because, mm-hmm. you know, when you take the job, you go into 6 months of building your roster and never stopping to take a breath. And then you finally get your roster together and you get your players here and you get right into playing and games. And, you know, we're playing 3 to 4 games a week. And so you just don't stop and breathe much, you know. So I know that when the season is over, that I'll be able to really enjoy looking back at like year one as a head coach in the best pro league in the world.
That is Atlanta Dream head coach Nikki Cullen speaking with my colleague Leah Fleming, Morning Edition host for GPB Atlanta. This is On Second Thought. And for the record, we all look like Instagram models.